Hello, my name is Rob Bennett. I'm the author of a book entitled Passion Saving, The Path to Plentiful Free Time and Soul-Satisfying Work. I'm also the publisher of the PassionSaving.com website, and I'm working on a second book entitled Investing for Humans, How to Get What Works on Paper to Work in Real Life. This is podcast number 196. I'm recording it on Wednesday, December 30th, 2009. The P10 level today is 20. That's not good. Stocks do not offer an exciting value proposition at today's price levels. The music for the podcast is by Kevin McLeod at Incompetech.com. The title of the selection is Awkward Meeting. The title of the podcast is Valuation Informed Indexing and Buy and Hold are Opposite Investing Strategies. Opposite investing strategies, he says. Wow. Not just saying buy and hold's a little bit wrong, are you, Rob? That's not enough for you. Yeah, come up with an opposite investing strategy to the conventional wisdom. You some kind of nut? Well, let me tell you. There was a post put to the Vanguard Diehards board at Morningstar.com. Yesterday I saw it. It's dated Monday. Monday at 8 o'clock p.m. by a fellow named Win1177. I'll read it. It's short. The poster says, I have been reading some interesting concepts about valuation-informed investing, which John Walter Russell and others wrote a lot of interesting information about. I know that this is not necessarily a true diehard approach, but does anyone know where to get the current PE10 of the market? I was saddened to read about the recent passing of John Russell, and I've had trouble locating current values for some of his formulas. I would like to read some more to see if this may be a possible way to tweak one's core allocation when the market gets extremely expensive, like now, or dirt cheap, like this past March. I will always have my basic allocation categories percentages, but maybe direct new money, interest, dividends, income, based on some of this info. Thanks. And a fellow responded and directed Win to the Robert Shiller, Yale Professor Robert Shiller's database, where he does indeed give information for the current P10 value. You can get the current P10. The P10 is critical to all stock investing decisions. PE10 tells you the price at which stocks are selling. And you wouldn't buy a car without knowing the price. And you wouldn't buy a house without knowing the price. And you wouldn't buy a comic book or a banana or a sweater without knowing the price. So you should not buy stocks without knowing the price. And to know the price, you have to know the P10 value. That's the price of stocks. That information is available at Robert Shiller's website. You can find that on the web. If you go to Google and put in Robert Shiller, you'll find it. And you can also find it at PassionSaving.com. If you go to the stock return predictor on the left-hand side of the page, there's a link. Not a link. It's just it's there at the site. But you can pull up the stock return predictor. And as the default result, I enter in the current P10 value. So it tells you the current P10 is 20. And that's not good for stocks. Not as insanely high as it was from January 96 through September of 2008, but on the warning track. And given the environment we're living in, to be investing in stocks at that high a price is a dubious value proposition in Rob Bennett's opinion. Now, I wanted to make two comments about Wynn's post. One, sort of an editorial comment, and then I'll go into the meat of the podcast. The podcast? I always need to read these titles so that I don't forget what it is I'm supposed to be talking about. Valuation-informed indexing and buy and hold are opposite investing strategies. The editorial comment I wanted to make is that we've had a lot of people put up posts like this at bogleheads.org, at Vanguard Diehards, at Motley Fool, at Early Retirement Forum. And these people should be able to get good answers to their questions. And the obvious person who should be answering these questions is the guy who developed valuation-informed indexing, who happens to be named Rob Bennett, fellow talking to you on this podcast. So if I were able to post at Vanguard Diehards and I was an active daily poster there for 2 years, I would give this guy a much, much better answer to his question. And the guy is right. to follow the work of John Walter Russell. John Walter Russell was my partner in developing the stock return predictor. John Walter Russell's site is early-retirement-planning-insights.com. Most exciting website on the planet, in my opinion. But John Walter Russell recently died a few months ago, and I miss him every day. But the guy is right. But the guy shouldn't only be quoting John Walter Russell. He should be quoting Rob Bennett. Because, you know, and John Walter Russell would have been the first to tell you that. You know, I developed valuation-informed indexing with John. I couldn't have done it without John's statistical help. I couldn't have done it myself. But, you know, it was my post to the Motley Fool board that got the ball rolling, that led to the development of that investing model. And, you know, we all need to work up a little bit of backbone, people, a little bit of gumption, and stand up to these goons. If somebody had put up on that thread, you know, the place to go is Rob Bennett's site, and you'll get 200 podcasts and 4 calculators and, you know, a daily blog and, you know, 100 articles on valuation-informed indexing. If somebody had told this fellow that, the guy would have been hit with a brick from one of the Lindauer or Graney goons. Well, you know what? They're going to keep hitting us with bricks until we develop the gumption to stand up for ourselves. We have a right to use these boards to learn the realities of stock investing. If John Graney got some numbers wrong in a retirement study, too bad. If Mel Lindauer got some important information wrong in his book, The Boglehead's Guide to Investing, too bad. So we need to stand up for ourselves. We need to develop a little backbone. It's our retirements that are at stake. And when people ask a question on a public discussion board, they should be able to get a good, complete answer. And the answers this fellow got, he got 2 responses. They were not complete. He got a link to Robert Shiller's website, which is a step in the right direction. But he needs a lot of materials. You know, and that's the point of Passion Saving, of all the investing material at PassionSaving.com. And that ain't the only guy out there that's looking for some realistic information today on stock investing. They number in the millions. I know, because every place I've ever posted, I've gotten the same reaction. I've gotten 2 reactions. A strong positive reaction from ordinary middle-class investors trying to learn the realities of stock investing. And a strong abusive reaction from big shots like Mel Lindauer and John Graney, who got some things wrong. And, you know, are not man enough to admit it. Can we speak frankly? For heaven's sake. All right, that's the editorial. Now, the guy made a comment, though, that you know, the fellow who put the thing up is obviously not a goon. He's a guy with a sincere interest in learning how to invest more effectively, and I'm, of course, grateful to him that he's interested in my investing approach. But he says something that, you know, is a misperception. And I don't think it's a misperception because of anything John Russell told him. I think it's a misperception because of his own cognitive dissonance. So I want to correct that misperception. When I see somebody say something like this, it makes me think there are a lot of people out there thinking this. And in case anyone coming to my site has the same misperception, I want to put out, you know, a response so that they can see, they can think through the realities and perhaps protect themselves. He says, he's sort of in this apologetic mode. This is the whole problem we have today with investing, that people are apologetic. The buy and holders got it wrong. They made the biggest mistake in the history of personal finance, while also providing many valuable insights. But because of that mistake, they've caused the biggest loss of middle-class wealth in the history of the United States and the second biggest economic crisis in the history of the United States. The economic crisis has been so big that it's causing damage to our political system. People are losing faith in their political leaders, and these people to this day, 8 years after the error was brought to their attention, have still not worked up the courage to step forward and say, hey, I was wrong. Here's what Wynn says, Wynn1177. He says, I would like to read some more to see if this may be a possible way to, quote, tweak one's core allocation when the market gets extremely expensive or dirt cheap. I will always have my basic allocation percentages, but maybe direct new money based on some of this info. So he's being apologetic. He's saying, I'm not anti-buy and hold. I'm not like that Rob Bennett fellow. Don't throw any bricks at me. Don't get mad at me. Don't start a smear campaign against me. I like you guys. I think you're great. I think you're big shots. I think you're smart. Well, yeah. If somebody wants to start out with valuation-informed indexing with only a small part of their portfolio, 10%, and, you know, follow buy-and-hold strategies for 90%, well, you know, that's an option. Try that. I don't have any problem with it. You know, you earn the money. You decide how to invest it. But it's my job to, I think, be a guide for people thinking of trying this strategy. And I feel a need to point out that logically, that is a logically incoherent approach. And I don't know. I don't think people get this. It's not hard to explain. Not hard to understand. But, cognitive dissonance kicks in big time when this question comes up. The question is, you know, John Bogle and thousands of very smart, very good people developed the buy and hold model. And it's been promoted, you know, for 30 years or more everywhere. Wall Street Journal, Money Magazine, you know, everywhere. Rob Bennett, guy comes along. Main talent is he's figured out to get stuff posted on the internet. He hasn't gone to investing school. He hasn't managed any big fund. He doesn't make millions of dollars. He appears to be a reasonably intelligent fellow. You know, he's graduated law school, has a master's in tax law, and, you know, worked at a big six accounting firm, that sort of thing. But, you know, seems like a reasonably nice sort of individual, you know, speaks politely about people, except when it comes to buy and hold. But, you know, who does this guy think he is? He said, he says, you know, buy and hold is, he doesn't say it's a little bit wrong. He says it's wildly wrong. He says it's dangerous. He says it's the primary cause of the economic crisis. Who is this fellow? Where does he get off? Well, this, as time has gone on, more and more, I've realized that this is maybe the core problem. This is a central problem. When I posted at Vanguard Diehards, you know, I had people that loved me. I had people say, Rob, you know, the first guy who's ever talked about investing that made sense. Love you, man. Everything you say. I remember a guy said, everything you say is clear as a bell to me. You know, all these people are acting like you're confusing, but you're sure not confusing to me. And another guy said, oh, you know, I learned about valuations before the crash, and I'm a lot richer today as a result. And yes, I learned it from Rob. And, of course, the goons, they talk nonsense. You can't take anything they say seriously. But there are a lot of people who are not goons, who and like this fellow, this Wynn fellow, they're not goons. He's trying to learn. You know, he wouldn't put up a post if he wasn't trying to learn. And those are the ones that hit me deep. Because these are the people I'm trying to help, and they're appearing on discussion boards. And they're first of all, they're clearly sincere. They're trying to learn. Secondly, they're actually interested in my ideas, which, of course, is gratifying. And yet, there's something that I say or do that rubs them the wrong way. I'm not being effective. I'm not achieving my goal. And this bothers me. And I have to step back and say, Rob, are you doing something to make this happen? I talked to a woman once. I shouldn't go off on a side issue, but I'll do it briefly. But there was a woman who had a website, and somehow we connected. And I was talking to her, and I said, "Look, you know, I can use some help with my building my website. I've got these goons; they're destroying my business. They follow me around the internet, and this and that. And what can I do?" And she had some skills in the public relations area. She had worked in that field, and I, you know, we sort of batted around some ideas. We spent a couple hours on the phone, and, you know, she didn't study investing, so she couldn't comment on the investing side. And I said, you know, but she finally said, Rob, can I speak frankly with you? I'm trying, you know, I want to help you. I said, sure, speak frankly, by all means. I don't want to waste your time going, you know, talking nonsense. She says, Rob, if there are this many people who hate you, and you tell me, I told her, I use a quote, I say I'm the most hated person on the internet. At least I was before the crash. And she said, Rob, if there are this many people that hate you over this many years, there's something you're doing. It's not just them. There's something you're doing. And you have to find out what you're contributing to this. Well, it stopped me in my tracks. I think the woman means well. I think she's wrong. I don't think there's anything I'm doing. I don't think there's anything I'm doing. Because I need to give accurate information. And the reality is, buy and hold has been promoted so heavily that millions of people believe it and millions of people have an emotional attachment to it. This is the problem we have is that people have put their retirement money in it. And they've told their friends about it. And they've had discussions with their spouse. Their spouse maybe said, this is a little risky. This is a little dangerous, this money in stocks. And whether it was the husband or the wife said to the spouse, no, you haven't heard. You don't know about John Bogle. But he says this is safe. This is good. This is prudent. This is real. This is science. It's academic research. This is okay. And it's not. It's dangerous as all get out. It's the most dangerous investing strategy ever developed by mortal man. Not deliberately, but that's what it's become. So there is no middle ground. I can't show up and say, I can say, there are all kinds of things I can say. I can say in order to, you know, try to be moderate, in order to try to make peace, I can say John Bogle's a genius, I have no problem. I can say John Bogle revolutionized investing, no problem with that. I can say the people who developed buy and hold built the foundation for the most valuable investing strategy ever. Rational investing, in my opinion, valuation-informed indexing, couldn't exist without the passive investors, without the buy and holders. So if you want me to say things like that, fine. Yeah, I can say them. But if you want me to say that buy and hold works, no, that I cannot say. That I cannot say. And they need to hear that. A lot of the buy and holders, the dogmatics, need to hear that, or they go into mass freakout mode. They become so emotionally distressed that they can't bear it. So I didn't cause that. They shouldn't be getting that. The very fact that they're emotionally distressed should tell people that there's something wrong here with this strategy. If the strategy were a good strategy, it would make people confident. And if it made people confident, there wouldn't be these mass freakouts. So the reaction to valuation-informed indexing proves that buy and hold doesn't work. Doesn't prove it with numbers, but it proves it with emotions. It shows that this is not an investing strategy fit for humans. If it causes people to react in this way, there's something wrong here, something seriously wrong. So I don't think that I did it. I've tried to be diplomatic, accommodating, but the line I've drawn in the sand is I've said I will not post dishonestly, and that means I need to say just how bad buy and hold is, because if you follow buy and hold, I don't believe you can be successful in the long term as an investor. So I can't say, oh, it's just a little bit wrong. So but what this poster is doing is something that a lot of people have done. You know, I've talked to thousands and thousands of middle class investors over the past 8 years. And, you know, some reject it out of hand. They just, I like buy and hold, end of story. Others love valuation-informed indexing. They say, Rob, you know, fantastic, thanks so much. And there's a fairly big number in the middle that says, there was a guy, his name was Jim. And he posted at Vanguard Diehards, and he said, Rob, he says, I like what you've come up with. And that's all fine. He says, but if you were saying that, oh, stocks are a little overvalued and maybe a good idea to lower your allocation a bit, he says, that would be fine. He says, I've heard other people say that, and I think that's okay. And if people were picking on you for saying that, I'd stick up for you. But Rob, That's not what you're saying. It's not what you're saying. You're saying the whole model's wrong. And you're the one that has the better model. This is over the top. Well, I didn't ask to be the one who had the better model, did I? The history here is that I calculated the safe withdrawal rate accurately based on John Bogle's book. And I used it to put together my own retirement plan. And then I shared that with my fellow community members at Motley Fool. And hundreds of them said, this is fantastic. The best discussion we've ever had. And John Graney didn't like it. And John Graney organized a goon squad and burned the board to the ground. And then we set up other boards. And then he followed us and burned those to the ground. And now he follows us to every personal finance blog where we discuss the realities. And my knowledge of the realities has obviously grown deeper and deeper and deeper as I have learned new things, and I learn new things every day, and this has been going on 7.5 years. So I know a lot today. I'm not smarter than any of these people. I'm not. And I want them working on our side. I want John Bogle helping. I want Bill Bernstein helping. I want Scott Burns helping. I want Jonathan Clements helping. We go a lot faster with them on our side instead of trying to shut us down. I want the entire Bogleheads.org community helping. I want Vanguard Diehards community helping. I want Early Retirement Forum community helping. I want IndexUniverse.com helping. I can generate insights, podcasts, and calculators, but these people can do the same. Probably faster than I can. A lot of them. But there's one thing I've done that they haven't done. And that's why I have sailed ahead of them. That's why I am now years ahead of John Bogle or Bill Bernstein or Scott Burns or any of these others in my understanding of how stock investing works. Not because I'm smarter. I'm years ahead because I acknowledged that buy and hold can't work. And once you acknowledge that, you stop directing your mental energies to rationalizing buy and hold, and you start directing your mental energies to developing a model that can really work. And that's what I do. And so I just keep, it's like driving a car, and they've got more horsepower than I've got. John Bogle can drive 90 miles an hour, and Rob Bennett's trudging along at 35. But John Bogle's going in the wrong direction. So I'm making a lot of headway on him, the guy. Not because he's dumb, because he's gone in the wrong direction. He's got a reverse course. And that's where emotion kicks in. That's where he says, oh, I get the sick feeling in my stomach when I start thinking that, what if buy and hold is wrong? That would mean that I've spent years of my life trying to help people, and it turns out I've been hurting people, and I can't deal with it. And he closes his eyes, and he covers his ears, and he rips up the historical data, and he never learns the lessons he needs to learn. He never develops the insights he needs to benefit from. That's what's going on. So this fellow who's saying, oh yeah, I'm gonna be, most of my portfolio is gonna be decided by buy and hold, but maybe 10% I'll do according to valuation-informed investing strategies. Well, if that's how you gotta get your feet wet, fine, do whatever you have to do, but it's not logically coherent. Valuation-informed indexing is the opposite of buy and hold. These are opposite investing strategies. Now, so I listed, after reading that post, I put together a list. I think I have 30 of them. Is that right? 28, 29? Yeah, I have 30. Might be hard to read my writing, but I have 30 ways in which they're opposite. And hopefully I'll only spend a minute or so on each one. But to set it up, I have to start by saying, they are opposite investing strategies, okay? I'm going to say that over and over and over again. You're not going to get me to back down on that one unless you make a very compelling case. But it is important to understand before I make that case that while they are opposite investing strategies, they are similar investing strategies in that the form is similar. Buy and hold and valuation-informed indexing are both database strategies. So they're both, at least in theory, rooted in something objective. They're both, at least in theory, scientific, as opposed to people just giving their opinions. And this is, of course, what attracted me to John Bogle and to safe withdrawal rate research from the first day. What I was frustrated with in the mid-90s when I was putting together my early retire early plan is that I would read, Expert A, and he'd say, oh, you know, get out of stocks, it's going to be Armageddon, you know, don't lose all your money. And I'd say, all right, well, that's interesting. And he's an expert. And then go to the next guy, and he'd say, oh, like, tune out, this doom and gloom is all a waste of time, stocks are best for the long run, buy and hold. Well, he's expert. Everybody's an expert, and everybody says the opposite thing. How can you make sense out of any of it? But if you apply science, if you look at what works historically, then you've got something objective. It doesn't mean that stocks are going to perform in the future exactly as they always have in the past. But it gives you something to root yourself in. It'd be a guide. And that's what attracted me to buy and hold in the first place, and to safe withdrawal rate research, which is a function of buy and hold. Safe withdrawal rate research is basically the retirement planning component of the buy and hold model. And I discovered by reading John Bogle's book that the old school safe withdrawal rate studies get the numbers wrong, not a little bit wrong, wildly wrong. And so, you know, all I thought I was doing on May 13, 2002 was reporting this fact, and I thought the fact would be accepted and that would be the end of it. And what happened is large numbers of people said, Rob, we don't want to know the facts. We want you to shut up. We don't want to hear about what the data says. We want to be blind. We don't want to know reality. And I said, oh, is that right? You want to follow a scientific approach, but you don't want to know reality. You want to have a numbers-based approach, but you don't want the numbers to be reported accurately. This is crazy. And that got me, you know, down this path of, you know, how did this happen? How is it that we persuaded millions of people to do something that makes them insecure, something that doesn't persuade them, and to put all their retirement money invested on it? And so, you know, day by day, I learn new things. I report them at the website, and you know, we learn more and more interesting things. But at the end of the day, these are not, you know, they're not valuation informed indexing is not a tweak of buy and hold, as this fellow Wynn said. It's not a tweak. It's a rejection. They are rooted in similar things. As I say, we couldn't have valuation-informed indexing without the work of Bogle and all the other buy-and-hold advocates. However, you can't reconcile the two. This is why the discussions have been so friction-filled. You can't reconcile the two. And John Graney got this from the first day. You know, he says, oh, if Rob's going to tell people what the numbers really say, you know, I'm shut down. I can't. How am I going to defend my case? I've been arguing data. And he's telling them what the data really says. And Mel Lindauer gets that. You know, something can be said for the goon leaders that they get it, that these two approaches are oil and water. They are not reconcilable. I want to be friends. I don't want to fight these people. But I do believe that if the internet were to be open to honest posting, it would not be a situation where some people would believe in the beginning, of course, 90% would continue to believe in buy and hold and 10% in valuation-informed indexing. But ultimately, it would be close to 100% would switch in time. It wouldn't happen in one day. But over time, because buy and hold simply cannot withstand informed questioning. It's a model that's based on a mistake. It can't withstand informed questioning. I have an entire podcast not too long ago, The Greatest Mistake Ever Made in the History of Personal Finance, where I explain what the mistake was. The mistake was that the academics, the buy and hold model came from academics. John Bogle took it from the academic field and you know, founded the Vanguard group of funds on this idea, this buy and hold efficient market idea. And the academics made a mistake. The academics thought it's all based on the market being efficient, which means the market being rational, the market setting prices properly. And the academics thought that the market was efficient immediately. This is Eugene Fama and all the other academics. They thought that the market is immediately efficient, you know, within 24 hours. So the market price is always right. It turns out that the market is efficient, but not immediately. It can take 10 years. It can take longer than 10 years in some cases. It often can take 10 years to move to efficiency. So what? That's the opposite. It's not a, because if the market is efficient from the first day, everything in the buy and hold model follows. If the market were truly efficient, it would all make sense. There's a strong logic chain to the buy and hold model. Please understand. So they, you know, that's not the weakness. The weakness is the premise. The weakness is the idea that the market's immediately efficient. If you buy into that, you buy into all the rest of it. But the historical data, the entire record shows that the market is not immediately efficient. Why do I say that? Because if the market were immediately efficient, that would mean stocks are always reasonably priced. That's what efficient means. It means the market sets the price properly. If the market set the price properly, the concept of overvaluation is meaningless. It's just pure silliness. But if the concept of overvaluation were pure silliness, the PE10 level would not predict future returns. But the PE10 level has always predicted future returns, going back to 1870, as far back as we have data. The odds that that is the product of pure coincidence, it's one in a million. I mean, that just can't be a coincidence. It can't be. You know, if there were one guy that you saw floating through the sky and everybody else was walking on the ground, you could say, well, the law is there's gravity, but there's one quirky guy, and I don't know, maybe he's invented some kind of, you know, anti-gravity machine, and he floats. But everybody else, but when you've got every person on the planet walking on the earth, you've got to say, wait a minute, there's something going on here. There must be gravity. There just must be. I mean, until somebody comes up with a better explanation, we have to believe there's gravity. All the evidence points in the same direction. Well, that's how it is with market efficiency. Every sliver of data we have shows that the market is not immediately efficient. Every sliver of data. And yet, buy and hold makes sense only if the market is efficient. If the market is not efficient, then obviously we should go with the common sense understanding, which is that valuations affect long-term returns, and if valuations affect long-term returns, there's zero sense in the idea of staying with the same allocation at all valuation levels. So these models are not, valuation-informed indexing is not a tweaking of buy and hold. It is a rejection of buy and hold. Now, it can be confusing because if, you know, I often point out you can go from 1975 through 1995, buy and hold investors and valuation informed indexers had the same stock allocation for 20 years. They say, well, 20 years, same. How can you say they're different models, Rob? Valuation informed indexing says I have a high allocation from 75 to 95. Buy and hold says I have a high valuation from high allocation from 75 to 95. They're the same thing, Rob. No. You're not going to invest only for 20 years. There's different ways to do valuation-informed indexing. Under some approaches, you would not have the same allocation. And there's different ways to do buy and hold. But in general, the two models say they do agree on certain points. There's overlap. And one of the points of overlap is both models say stocks offer the best value proposition for the middle-class investor. And so both recommend a high stock allocation as a general rule. And as long as prices are reasonable or low, as they were from 75 through 95, both models are going to call for high stock allocations. But from 96 through September 2008, they had very, 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 very different recommendations. 96 through 2008, valuation-informed indexing calls for a very low stock allocation, 20%, something in that neighborhood. And buy and hold calls for a high stock allocation, 70-80%. And when two models are calling, the difference between 20% and 80% is four times as high. So it's a 400% difference in your stock allocation for 12 years running. That's, you can't call those two models, you can't call one a tweaking of the other. They're not, it's not a tweaking. So I want to go through the 30 things and then I'll shut down. Hopefully I'll be able to go through each fairly quickly. Number one. Buy and hold says that the market is a perfect guide. This is the key. You know, I've talked to so many buy and holders, and I try to understand. A lot of them are very smart people. And I try to understand, and I say, you know, why do you believe in this? And what it usually comes to is they say, I believe in the market. They say, Rob, you're presenting intelligent arguments, but you're not as smart as the market. The market is smarter than anyone. The market is smarter than John Bogle, my hero. The market is smarter than me. The market is smarter than Warren Buffett. The market is smarter than anybody. And I'm going with the market. That's their Rock of Gibraltar. That's the thing they believe in. That's buy and hold. The market rules. The market is right. Valuation-informed indexing, no. Valuation-informed indexing says we are the market. The market is comprised of people. So the market is every bit as good as we are and every bit as bad as we are. It's up to us. If we want to make the market good, we can make the market good. But it's up to us. If we want to make the market bad, we can make the market bad. And from 1996 through 2008, we elected to make the market bad. We entered a period of collective insanity where we collectively decided to have the market set prices insanely high. That was a choice. We are the market. We have the power. And for the market to function, we have to be informed. And today, we're not informed. Ban on honest posting on investing realities on the internet. So how are we supposed to, if we are the market, how is the market going to get it right? If we can't even find out what the realities are, we can't even look at the stock return predictor unless you happen across my site. You're not going to find it linked at Boglehead. You're not going to find it linked at Early Retirement Forum. You're not going to find it linked at Vanguard Diehards. You're not going to find it linked at Index Universe. So how can you learn the realities? You can't. And if you don't know the realities and you're the market, then the market doesn't know the realities. And if the market doesn't know the realities, the market's not going to set the price properly. So buy and hold puts its faith in the market. Valuation-informed indexing puts its faith in, I guess you could say, the historical data and logic. And free speech. Valuation-informed indexers believe in allowing people to hear the realities and decide for themselves. Buy and holders, I think it would be fair to say, believe in dogmatism. They believe in only letting people hear one side of the story. That's a big flaw. Because when people only hear one side of the story, the market does not function. Does not function. So you can't make the market your guide. What you have to do is say, I want the market to get it right, and I'm going to work to make that happen. I'm going to work to open the internet up to honest posting. I'm going to work to educate people about the realities of stock investing, and I'm going to work to educate myself. And the better educated I am, the better my investing decisions, the better my investing decisions, the better the market functions, the better the market functions, the more proper prices are and the less volatility there is to stock investing, and the safer stock investing is, and the higher my returns and the lower my risk. So they put their, buy and holders put their faith in the market. We put our faith in human reason, put our faith in people who comprise the market, and we try to help people to help the market function properly. That's a big distinction. That's not a little thing. Point two, valuation-informed indexing is the lowest risk investing strategy that I know of, the lowest risk strategy possible. That doesn't mean it's best. I think it's best for most people. But for example, I think if you're willing to put the time in to become a value investor, the Warren Buffett strategy, I think that's better. I think you'll do better if you have the skill and the time. I do not think valuation-informed indexing is better than the Warren Buffett approach, value investing, picking individual stocks. But for 90% of middle-class people, we don't have the time to do that research, and many of us don't have the skill. And so for us, valuation-informed indexing is better. Now, when I say that the Buffett approach gives better returns, do I say that the Buffett approach gives better returns at the same risk? No. The Buffett approach, I do think, has more risk. It does give higher returns. It gives a higher payoff. But the risk is you might think you're smart enough to pick stocks, and you might be wrong. If you're right, you really will get better returns. If you're wrong, you can get killed. So there's some risk there. But if you're looking for an approach that has minimal risk, that's valuation-informed indexing. Now, buy and hold purports to be that. Buy and hold purports to be a low-risk strategy. It purports to be a way to let the market be your guide and thereby avoid risk, because you're essentially, under buy and hold, you're supposed to be piggybacking on the knowledge of everybody in the market. And that would allow you to sort of sail above the risk because you don't have to pick stocks. The problem is if the market is uninformed or if the market is emotional, as we saw from 96 through 2008 when the market set prices insanely high, you're gonna get killed by following the market. In other words, it's fine to say I'm going to follow the market, but you need a protection. You need a guide, a warning flag that says, hey, wait a minute. This is one of those times when you don't want to follow the market. This is one of those times when the market has gone bonkers. You don't want to be following the market. That's the layer that valuation-informed indexing adds to buy and hold. It says, yes, follow the market. Aim for that 6.5 real return that the market provides. But when the market goes bonkers, don't go bonkers with it. Keep your risk level roughly constant. So if you determined when stocks were at reasonable prices that a 60% stock allocation was right for you, well, when stocks go to insanely dangerous prices, you're not going to stay at 60%, are you? You're going to go maybe to 30. And when stocks are insanely low priced, you might go to 90. Keep your risk level constant. Don't go nuts when the market goes nuts. So valuation-informed indexing does what buy and hold only purports to do. It provides a low-risk investing strategy for the typical middle-class investor. Point three I've already discussed. A buy and hold says that the market is immediately efficient. It's all rooted in that premise. A valuation-informed indexing says the market is gradually efficient. That yes, the purpose of a market is to set prices properly, but that doesn't happen by magic. It takes time. People have to learn about the inefficiencies and then attack them. They talk about people exploiting inefficiencies. Well, that's all well and good, but it's sometimes you have to, in order to exploit an inefficiency, you have to study it and you have to get licenses and you have to hire employees and all this sort of thing. And it doesn't happen in 24 hours. It can take 5 years. It can take 10 years. It can even take 15 years. So efficiency is an important concept, but the conventional understanding of efficiency is completely wrong and dangerous. If you think that the market's instantly efficient, you're going to stay at the same allocation at all times. If you think that the market is gradually efficient, you must change your stock allocation in response to big changes in price. So it's only one difference. There's only that one difference between buy and hold and valuation-informed indexing. And that can lead a lot of people to think, oh, this is just a tweak. They only change one thing. But that one change logically causes hundreds of strategic changes. It turns it from black to white. That one change makes a big difference. Number four, I make this claim all the time. Valuation-informed indexing, you can retire 5 years sooner. That's a big deal. Look at the calculators. But 5 years is not a small thing. In other words, most of us only start investing when we're about 25, and we're aiming to retire at 65, so we have 40 years. Being able to pull it off in 35 years instead of 40 is not a small thing. It's hard. It's hard to have one change give you 5 years is a big deal. And valuation-informed indexing does that according to the historical data. Valuation informed indexing gives you a return of at least 6.5 real, assuming stocks perform in the future, somewhat as they always have in the past. Actually, it's higher than that. Our aim is just to get that 6.5. The reason we change allocations in response to big price changes is not to so much get higher returns. We're really just trying to get the market return 6.5. But if the market were rational, and I would like it if this happened, if we could persuade everyone to follow rational strategies, we would only get 6.5. Because their volatility would be eliminated. And I think that'd be just great. I think that'd be wonderful. The more other investors are irrational, the higher the returns are for the valuation-informed indexer. So in reality, most valuation-informed indexers are going to get more than 6.5, sometimes significantly more. You can look at the Scenario Surfer calculator, and you'll see sometimes at the end of 30 years, the portfolio size for the valuation-informed indexer is often double what it is for the buy-and-hold investor. So it can make a big, big difference. Does that mean that I wish that there'd be a lot of volatility in the market? I wish there'd be a lot of overvaluation so that I can take advantage, I can exploit these irrational strategies? No. The reason is when the market is irrational, the entire economy becomes unstable. And that's what we're suffering from today. We're in a situation today where buy and hold has caused such damage to our market that it's damaged our economic and political system, and we are at risk of going into the second Great Depression. And if we go into the second Great Depression, guess what? Valuation-informed indexers aren't going to make a lot of money. Valuation-informed indexers are going to suffer under the second Great Depression just alongside everybody else. So we should not be laughing at the buy and holders, at the mistakes they've made. We should be reaching out the hand of kindness, trying to help them. By helping them, we help the entire economic and political system, and thereby we help ourselves. This is not a game, you know, where we're trying to, you know, screw your buddy. It's not the idea. But we can count on a return of something in the neighborhood of 6.5. Buy and holders think they can, but if you actually look at the numbers and you look at what actually happens, buy and holders, some will get 6.5. A lot will get negative returns because the losses for buy and holders when you enter a secular bear market are so large. I mean, 90% of your portfolio is not out of the question. Very, 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 very few middle class investors can take a 90% loss. So most are going to sell. And if you look back after they sell and see what their lifetime return was, in some cases it will be negative, some cases 1%, 2%, 3%. My guess is that if you added them all up, buy and hold, probably, I think you could get safe asset classes that would provide 3% real if you were a careful shopper. You know, certificates of deposit, I-bonds, get 3% real. I think buy and holders might end up with 4% real. They might end up with something a little better than that. But it can't be 6.5. For it to be 6.5, none of them would sell. And that, we know that's wrong. I mean, the entire historical record says that's wrong. And you just think about what a 90% loss means. So that can't be right. So it's got to be less than 6.5. I doubt that it's more than 4. That buy and holders are getting. And valuation informed indexers are getting 6.5 plus. So maybe they're getting 8 on average. So that's a double. You see, that's an 8% return rather than a 4% return. That's double. So that's a big difference. That's not a tweak. You know, investing is all about gaining that sort of edge, doubling your return. That's not a tweak. That's the real thing. Point 6. Bravado versus growing confidence. Buy and holders have bravado. They say, oh, I'm going to stick. I'm never going to sell stuff. It's all bravado. It's bullying. It's bragging. How many times have I had a buy and holder say, oh, Rob, I got $1 million. What do you got? You know, as if I'm supposed to be impressed by that. It makes me feel sad for them. The people feel they have to brag. You know, John Graney told me he lost well in excess of $1 million in the crash. So he starts out bragging about having millions, and then he loses $1 million. That's smart investing? I don't think so. Bravado. Bravado is not similar to growing confidence. It's opposite. Bravado is a fake confidence. Valuation-informed indexers have a growing confidence because as time goes on, their understanding of how stock investing works is confirmed by the realities over and over and over again. It drives me crazy when I hear people say about this crash, they'll say, oh, what a surprise. Whoever thought something like that? Well, guess who thought about it? All the people who understand that valuations affect long-term returns. Robert Shiller wasn't surprised by this crash. He saw it coming years ago. John Walter Russell wasn't surprised. Cliff Asness wasn't surprised. Rob Arnott was not surprised. Ed Easterling was not surprised. Jeremy Grantham was not surprised. Rob Bennett was not surprised. People who understand that valuations affect long-term returns were not even a little bit surprised. Saw it coming years ago. Buy and holders were surprised. Well, that should tell you that maybe there's something wrong with buy and hold. If you're always getting surprised to the tune of well in excess of $1 million for John Graney, if you're always getting surprised to the tune of $1 million loss, maybe there's something wrong with your investing strategy. Maybe you ought to go back and check some of your fundamental premises and see if you got in the wrong track somewhere. Maybe you're devoting all your mental energies to driving in the wrong direction. Could that be? Point number seven, learning avoidance versus excited to learn more. Talk about that all the time. None of us know everything there is to know about stock investing. I wrote an article for this journal. I forget the exact name. The Journal of Life Planning and Integrative Personal Finance, something like that. And I like the group that puts it together. And I decided to write about. You can find it if you go to the blog. Go to the Rich Life blog, and if you go down the side, I have, either side. On the one side, I have, on the left-hand side, I have People Are Talking, and you'll find a link to it there, or you can go on the right-hand side. I have my favorite blog entries. You'll find it there. The title of it was something like, A Humble Money Advisor is a Good Money Advisor, something like that. That's not exactly it. But I think it had a little more punch in the real version. But the point is, none of us know it all, okay? If you don't know it all, what you need to do is to be a little bit humble, because we all have to start investing. Most of us start earning. We can't wait until we're 60. Investing is a strange thing in that in most life endeavors, you learn how to do it before you do it. Like, you wouldn't drive a car if you didn't know how to drive, right? You wouldn't say, well, I don't know how to drive, but, you know, I'm hoping to learn someday, but I'm going to start driving now because I need to get to the store. So I've never had any lessons. I've never taken a course. I don't know what I'm doing, but I got to drive. So, you know, I'm going to drive. No, you'd say that's crazy. But that's what we do with investing. We're 25 years old and we don't know how to invest. We don't have any experience. And we haven't had time to read books. We're moving ahead in our career and this sort of thing. And we say, well, you know, I got to invest. The experts say buy and hold. Stock selling industry says put your money in stocks. They wouldn't say that unless it were true. With that, I mean, they're trying to sell stocks. They make millions, but they wouldn't let that influence what they tell me. I mean, nobody would ever do that. Salesmen don't ever let the fact that they make money from something influence. So I'll put all my money there. I'll just do what they say. Well, That's just as crazy. Just as crazy. But you can't wait until you're 50 to start investing. You've got to invest at 25 or you're not going to make it. You're not going to be able to do what you got to do. So we all invest at times when we don't know what we're doing. Now, as long as we keep our minds open to learning experience, that's fine. And time will learn and everything will be cool. But if we start thinking, once I put my money in, I can never admit a mistake. I must be pompous. I must be arrogant. I must be all-knowing. Then whatever dumb thing you do at 25, you're still going to be doing at 30 and 35 and 45 and 55. And that's what, that's what buy and hold's all about. It's, okay, we came up with some good stuff. We came up with some dumb stuff. Now let's never change. Let's block out all information. Learning avoidance versus excited to learn more. part of a key principle of rational investing is you always want to learn more. Every day is a day to learn something new. Why? Because it makes you money. And that's how you achieve financial freedom. And financial freedom is groovy. So, you know, that's really all you need to know. It's so simple. But how many buy and holders are open to learning? Check the post archives of the Great Safe Withdrawal Rate debate to find out the answer. Point number 8. Open to stock picking versus a need to pretend that stock picking never works. I have a separate podcast called Stock Picking Works. I think Bogle's right to advise the typical middle-class investor to invest in index funds. 90% of us, I think, should be in index funds. But 10% of us should be picking stocks. And the 90% who are in index funds probably should be picking stocks with a small amount of our money so that over time we learn more about investing. And telling people that indexing, which is the most simple strategy around, is also the best possible strategy, is not humble. It's arrogant. If you want to say it's best for 90%, I can go along with that. That you know, that argument sort of holds up. But no, it's we should be open to stock picking, and we should want to learn from those who know more than us. Point number 9, individual orientation versus community orientation. I mentioned how buy and hold uses this word exploit, and it's just such a turnoff to me. It's all about, oh, you're gonna stab your buddy in the back, you're gonna find some flaw and exploit it. I mentioned valuation-informed indexing is a community-oriented thing. We want everyone to learn how to invest effectively. How many times have I had people tell me, Rob, why don't you go to Bear Boards? You know, you don't have to tell the Bogleheads how to invest. You don't have to tell Vanguard Hires. Go to some Bear Board where everybody agrees with you about valuations, and you won't be in trouble. I don't want, you know, that's all fine and good. But, what good does it do for me to go to a place where everybody understands that valuation affects long-term returns and explain to them that valuations affect long-term returns? How does that advance the ball? The people I want to persuade are the people who don't understand it today. That's how we learn. It's the people who don't understand it that need to hear the message, not the people who already get it. But that's caring. You know, that's caring about your fellow middle-class investors or your fellow community members. You know, you care about them. You want them to get good investing results, so you want to talk to them. Is that a crime? Is that a bad thing? I don't think it's a bad thing. It's only a bad thing in the mind of the buy-and-hold investor, the arrogant, pompous, dogmatic buy-and-hold investor. Has a problem with that. Nobody else can hear any other ideas. It's got to be just, you know, it needs to be all marketing all the time. Constant repetition of the message, or somebody might start thinking for themselves, and the whole model will crumble to the ground. Number 10, a past focus versus a future focus. Well, I think valuation-informed index is a more optimistic, attitude, because buy and hold is the investing model of the past. Valuation-informed indexing is the investing model of the future. You know, simple as that. I like to look forward rather than to look back. I mean, you know, these people are waiting for the summer of 99 to come back. It ain't coming back. Let's move forward. Let's make the summer of 2010 better than the summer of 99 instead of looking backward and saying, oh, I wish we could go back to the days when nobody knew that buy and hold didn't work. Wouldn't that be great? No. No, we were just kidding ourselves then. We thought we were doing the right thing. We thought we were making lots of money, but we were dopes. Now that we know we're dopes, we can't forget it. So we need to look forward instead of looking backward. Point number 11, common sense versus convoluted rationalizations. The idea that price matters when buying stocks is the most obvious idea. I mean, you know, this is why I say you don't need an IQ of 140 to figure out what Rob Bennett figured out. Most obvious thing there could be. So why don't all the buy and holders just acknowledge it? They go to these incredible convoluted rationalizations. You know, oh, if that were true, then that would mean that you could, it'd be a free lunch. If there was a better way to invest than the way we came up with, that would be a free lunch. Oh, there's no such thing as a free lunch. Nobody could ever be as smart as I am. I'm the smartest ever. You know, lots of mental energy, lots of IQ points. But if your IQ points are all being directed to developing these convoluted rationalizations, what good are they doing you? What good are they doing you? It's emotionally unhealthy. Point 12. Stocks are always best versus identifying what is best. You know, it's not stocks for the long run. It's idiotic. Stocks for the long run, the suggestion is that stocks are always the best asset class. Is there anything in the world that is the best at any possible price? Just use your common sense. The purpose of investing is to find out what's best. Sometimes it's stocks. Most of the time it's stocks. Sometimes it's CDs, certificates of deposit. Sometimes it's I bonds. Sometimes it's treasury inflation protected securities. It's not always stocks. Now, it might be that stocks are always best for the stock selling industry. In terms of the commissions earned, it might be the stocks for the long run. But that ain't what the middle class investors should be worried about. Our goal is not to put commissions in the pockets of the investing experts. Our goal should be to invest effectively. And in the long term, I think that's best for the stock selling industry too. Because if we go into the second Great Depression, where does that put the stock selling industry? I think it's going to cause problems for the stock selling industry as well. So we're not against the stock selling industry. We're trying to help them just like we're trying to help the middle class investor. Investing should be about identifying strong value propositions. If it happens to be stocks, and it usually is, we should say that. If it happens to be certificates of deposit offer a far better deal than stocks, or TIPS, TIPS offered a far better deal than stocks back in January 2000, then we should tell people that. Point 13, short-term versus long-term. Buy and hold, one of the things I love about it is that it purports to be a long-term strategy. But think about it, is it? I mentioned the greatest mistake in the history of personal finance. If it were true that the market were immediately efficient, would that not suggest that short-term price changes have significance? Sure seems so to me. If you believe that the market is immediately efficient, then what you believe is the price changes that take place day to day are the result of a rational reaction to changes in the economic climate. And if that's true, then those price changes are significant and meaningful, and you should be paying attention to them. So you're focusing on the short term. You're not tuning out the short term noise. You're paying attention to it. And go to any discussion board where buy and holders meet, and you'll find them all talking every day about the changes in the price. They say they don't, they say they shouldn't, but they do it. Because the model self-contradicts. The model tells them that those things are meaningful, so of course they can't tune it out. Valuation-informed indexing says the day-to-day price changes are truly meaningless. They're just the result of emotion. In a rational market, the price change would always be 6.5 real per year. And anything more than that or less than that is gibberish volatility. Pointless. And because we accept that these changes are meaningless, we really can tune them out. We really can focus on the long term. We've got tools to focus on the long term. Stock return predictor is not a short-term tool. Stock return predictor is our key tool. And it doesn't tell you where to put your money to get a benefit in 3 months or 6 months or 9 months or 12 months. It tells you where to get a benefit in 5 years or 10 years or 20 years. The long term. Valuation-informed indexing is a long-term strategy. Buy and hold pretends to be a long-term strategy. It's a short-term strategy in long-term strategy clothing. Point 14, a marketing focus versus an education focus. Buy and hold is marketing. It's all marketing slogans. Buy and hold is a marketing slogan. Stocks for the long run is a marketing slogan. Stay the course is a marketing slogan. You can't beat the market is a marketing slogan. All of these things are half-truths. They all have some grain of truth in them. That's what gives them emotional appeal. You know, I have a podcast called They Used Our Natural Risk Aversion Against Us. What buy and hold is all about is coming up with marketing slogans that have great emotional appeal to the middle class investor because they sound prudent. They sound like they're putting aside all the gibberish, all the get-rich-quick stuff. But in reality, buy and hold is the greatest get-rich-quick scheme ever. What does buy and hold tell you? It tells you stock prices can go up 30% and there's no price to pay down the road. You just stay at that same stock allocation, which suggests that the value proposition of stocks has not been damaged by that 30% price gain. Huh? Where did the 30% price gain come from? It, of course, came, it was borrowed from future returns. And since it was borrowed from future returns are going to be dramatically less than 6.5. And when you do the math, you'll find out that returns, the long-term return in at the prices that applied to January 2000 was a negative number. When it's a negative number, you don't want to be 70% in stocks. Pretending that price doesn't matter is get-rich-quick thinking. So it's marketing. Valuation-informed indexing is educational. You'll look at the return predictor, and it educates you about how the market works. You see this price increase, you start thinking, yeah, that sounds good. I got more money in my portfolio. Then you look and you say, wait a minute, it's not so good. All I did was lower the long-term return. I broke even on that. No gain there. Same thing if price goes down. If the price for a year is less than 6.5, you say, well, yeah, I got a little less in my portfolio because the price wasn't what it should have been, but that increases the long-term return, so it all balances out in the end. It's an educational tool. The historical data educates you if you look at it in an analytically valid way. I've got to speed up. Point 15, injured pride / shame versus compassion. There's just the emotional tone of buy and hold is poisonous. This is why we've had this campaign of terror against the retire early and indexing discussion board communities. The emotional tone of valuation-informed indexing is compassion for your fellow community member, your fellow investor, and yourself. You know, has there ever been a valuation-informed indexer who's put forward an abusive post? We've had thousands and thousands and thousands of them directed at us. Have we ever responded in kind? I can't think of a case when that's ever happened. Point 16. Unnecessary manufactured complexity versus good enough simplicity. I think I've said that. I've covered that. Valuation-informed indexing is truly a simple strategy. Buy and hold pretends to be, purports to be. But look what it turns into. Look at all the panic you see among buy and holders. Just go to the discussion boards and see. See how people react. When prices fall, not in a surprising way, but exactly as should have been expected to anyone who was familiar with the historical data. And buy and hold claims to be a data-based approach. Point 17, pro-risk versus calculated / managed risk. Buy and hold is risky as all get out because what you're doing is you're investing blind. You're not looking at the price. You're not looking at the long-term value proposition. You're just saying, I'm going to go with the market no matter how insane it is. What could be riskier than that? You're investing blind. I can't think of anything more risky. Valuation-informed indexing, you look at the risk. You say, okay, the price has gone up. What's the new value? You know, what's the most likely 10-year return? And you make a judgment call. You don't know everything, so you do have to take some risk. But it's a calculated risk. It's an informed risk. I see a big difference there where you're at least trying to learn what you need to learn instead of, you know, putting your hands over your eyes, putting your fingers in your ears. Point 18, manipulation of data. Versus, analytically valid. You know, look at our safe withdrawal rate studies. Retirement planning studies that get the numbers wrong. That's buy and hold. The top of the bubble, the buy and holders were saying that a 4% withdrawal was 100% safe. When you look at the data in an analytically valid way, what you find out is a 4% withdrawal had a 30% chance of working. Larry Swedrow, who is an advocate of buy and hold, says that those studies are garbage in, garbage out research. That tells the story. And how many buy and holders have made an effort to get those studies corrected? How many? Small number. Larry Swedrow hasn't done it. He should be applauded for telling us that it's garbage in, garbage out research. That's obviously a positive step. But why doesn't Larry go to the New York Times and get a front page article warning people about these dangerous studies? What's he waiting for? You know, that's buy and hold for you, though. Manipulation of data. Give people studies, but don't give them the accurate numbers. Because you can't. If you give the accurate numbers, the whole thing collapses. Point 19, cognitive dissonance versus learning from insights from other fields. Cognitive dissonance is the dominant psychological reaction to the contradictions of the buy and hold model. Cognitive dissonance is where you can't stand to let the realities in because they're just too upsetting. Buy and holders are so far off the mark, they can't stand to hear the realities. They freak out. This is why I say this is not a a tweak. Valuation-informed indexing is not a tweak of buy and hold. It's a rejection of the cognitive dissonance that leads to these crazy strategies. The valuation-informed indexing approach is very, very different. It says, let's be open to all data from all sorts of fields. You know, let's take the very word cognitive dissonance comes from the psychological literature. It doesn't come from the investing literature. Let's let that in. Instead of drawing a circle and saying we're only going to listen to this, you know, this tight band of information. You know, we only can talk to people who look at Sharpe ratios. That's what they told me at Index Universe. They were going to publish an article of mine on valuation-informed indexing, and then the guy who's the editorial director, he has ties with Mel Lindauer, and he said, oh, Rob, we have a special rule for you. For anybody else, this article will be published. But for you, you got to talk about Sharpe ratios in every article. And every article you write has to be under 11 words, and you have to address every question ever discussed in investing since the beginning of time. If you can do that, Rob, we'll take another look at your article. Well, you know, that's blocking out information, blocking out things you can learn, blocking out people willing to contribute and help your community. That's the buy and hold approach. That ain't the valuation-informed indexing approach. I sure hope not. Point 20, respect for other asset classes versus rejection of anything but stocks. You know, I have a podcast. Cash is a strategic asset class. Cash can make you rich. I can't go into it all here. Listen to the podcast if you have time, please. But, you know, tips were an amazing asset class in January 2000. They were offering a 4% real return, and stocks were offering a negative 1% long-term return. 5-point differential every year for 10 years running. The person who went with tips at the end of 10 years was 50% higher than the person who went with buy and hold. But buy and holders, you know, react with venom to the discussion, to the idea, to the claim that anything could be better than stocks. You know, that's marketing. That's not stock analysis. That's the stock selling industry selling us a bill of goods, in my opinion. 21, let's see, where are we? 21, financial porn versus learning from everyone. The buy and holders are so defensive. You know, you can't, oh, you're mean, Rob. You told people what the historical data really says about safe withdrawals. Rob, you're so mean. John Graney had all the numbers wrong, and now if you tell people, they won't want to follow his study. Rob, what makes you so mean? But how often do the buy and holders refer to other strategies as financial porn? It's one of their favorite phrases, their pet phrases. Everything else is financial porn except for what's being delivered by the man in the mirror. Some things are financial porn. There is financial porn out there. But how about looking at the financial porn being put forward by the buy and holders before you start accusing others? I think there's a place for holding others accountable. But I think we should hold ourselves accountable first before we start looking elsewhere. Point 22, love versus anger. I like to think that the rational investing is rooted in love, a positive emotion. And I've often argued that anger is not a sound long-term investing strategy. There's too much anger among buy and holders, in Rob Bennett's opinion. I've seen a lot of it, believe me. 23, strategic probabilities versus blind dogma. I've mentioned that, you know, the rational investing model could be called probability investing. The whole idea is to look at the statistics, look at the data to determine statistically, you know, what allocation is most likely to pay off under different scenarios. Probability, it's all about learning the probabilities. Buy and hold is just blind dogma, you know. Stick with that allocation. Can't question it. Can't think about it. That's the characteristic mode of buy and hold is dogmatism. And dogmatism just rubs my fur the wrong way, friends and neighbors. I think it'd be fair to say. Point 24, theory versus practical. Buy and hold is a nice theory. Everybody admires the theory. Why? Because it's a closed system. If you buy into the buy and hold model, you can't get out because it's all circular. It all goes around in circles, and they don't allow anything from the outside. So the theory has this certain elegance, they say. I'd rather have something that works in the real world. When an elegant theory produces retirement numbers that cause millions of middle-class people to suffer failed retirements, my attraction to elegance in theory diminishes. I like a practical approach. I like theory. I love theory. But I like it to be grounded in something real. Economic man versus human. I call my book Investing for Humans. Buy and hold is all rooted in Adam Smith economics. Economic man. And again, there's a lot of good in that. A lot of powerful insights. But we need to know when it doesn't work too. You know, I believe Adam Smith economics, laissez-faire economics, I believe produced the first Great Depression. I think some of the changes that were made were needed. That doesn't mean I reject free markets. I love free markets. It's just any idea taken to an extreme can become dangerous. And I think buy and hold has so much good in it that it's frustrating that I have to criticize it so much. But I have to criticize it because we need to knock down this wall of dogmatism and blindness in order to get to all the good stuff. Because all the good stuff comes when we learn, when we build on what was good. But the dogmatism blocks that. And this idea that all you need to know is economic man. All you need to know is the market, the market, the market. And it becomes a suicide pact. We're all going to commit investing suicide before we start questioning the market, the market, the market. Point 26, behavior gap versus scaredy cat accusation. Well, for this one, you're going to have to listen to the podcast on the behavior gap. But I discuss how there's a big problem with buy and hold. The model doesn't describe how real humans behave. And there's lots of aspects to that. And so I think you really need to listen to the podcast. But, you know, all the buy and holders will say is, oh, if anybody sells, they're scaredy cats. If they don't stick to the plan, they're scaredy cats. And they're not scaredy cats. People sell because they're scared of what's going to happen to them when the economy goes over a cliff. That's why they sell. They sell because this stuff doesn't work. The spouses that are telling the buy and holders that maybe they ought to think again are doing the right thing. They're raising a voice of doubt on something that is being pushed with such intensity that we ought to have doubt. Point 27, growing sophistication versus one size fits all. Valuation-informed indexing is something I learn new things every day. So we have a growing sophistication. Buy and hold is something that became a dead language 3 decades ago. When Robert Shiller published his research showing that valuations affect long-term return, we should have abandoned it, or at least started on the road to abandoning it. Instead, what we did was said, this is a dead language. It can never change. We must all pretend that this is what works, even though our common sense tells us otherwise, and a mountain of data now tells us otherwise. Point 28, gurus versus common sense. How many times on discussion boards I was told, Rob, you can't tell us common sense. You're not a guru. You don't get paid millions of dollars to sell stocks. Who are you to tell us? Well, anybody can have common sense. You don't have to be a guru. You don't have to go to investing school. You don't have to manage a big fund. Point 29, bulls and bears versus working together. I don't believe in bulls and bears and all this nonsense. I have friends of mine that are bulls. I have friends of mine that are bears. We're all trying to achieve the same investing goal. We should all learn from each other. Rob Bennett's opinion. Point number 30. Forcing yourself not to panic versus, quote, panic, unquote, through small adjustments. With buy and hold, you got to tie yourself to the mast. When your portfolio's going down to nothing, you got to say, I'm not going to panic. I'm going to stick with my same crazy stock allocation no matter what. Which means you panic at the worst time possible. You panic after the 80% loss instead of before. With valuation-informed indexing, you have a lot of it's not panic. You have gradual panics. You know, the P10 level gets to 20 and you lower your allocation a notch. It gets to 25, you lower it some more. Gets to 30, you lower it some more. You don't just stay tied to the mast until you get to 44 P10 level where the long-term return is a negative number. So that's I didn't expect that one to go that long. I wish it hadn't gone so long, but there were a lot of points that I felt needed to be covered. I don't think that valuation-informed indexing is a tweaking of buy and hold. I have no objection if somebody wants to just start with 10% of their portfolio, but ultimately, I don't think these two models can be reconciled. I see valuation-informed indexing as a rejection of buy and hold, and I think that's the reason for a lot of the friction we've seen, that buy and hold dogmatics see that, and they are threatened by it, and ultimately, I think every investor benefits from knowing the realities of stock investing. Ultimately, we're going to have to open the internet to honest posting on the flaws in the buy and hold model. And ultimately, we're all going to move to a valuation-informed indexing approach. We're all going to be a lot better off, and we're all going to be friends, I do believe. Good luck with your investing strategies. Take care.